Okay, are we ready to start the feedback then? Shall I kick off then with the first of the groups that discussed Portulaca and OCI? So in this group, we didn't really have any disagreements, I think, with the proposed description of statement of profit or loss, which was question one on page two of our book. And some people thought it was quite clear. Nobody was really suggesting that we should try and come up with a definition of profit or loss. One or two people sort of regretted the fact that it wasn't possible, but didn't think we should really spend more time trying to look for one. In terms of OCI, people didn't seem to have any real disagreement with what was proposed there either. What we did spend a lot of time discussing was, is there too much use of current measurements, and would it be better to limit the use of current measurement more? And perhaps if you only use current measurements when you're really committed to it, then maybe there'd be you feel less need for.
It sounds like you're discussing the second issue, wouldn't it? Well, did it get out of hand without you controlling it? Or?
That was my fault.
I should have known.
I should have been the other group.
And I think some of that came from concerns about complexity of using OCI and using different measurements. And then a couple of more detailed points, maybe. In the description of the purpose of profit or loss, there's a discussion of its purpose being to depict the return the entity has made on its assets. And there's a question about whether that's inconsistent with the statement that the purpose of financial reporting isn't to value the entity. So I think we need to clarify that we're talking about depicting the return to the extent that is captured in the financial statements. That's probably sort of a drafting point. And then there was also a suggestion that we should see if there's a way of being a bit more definitive about when recycling should occur, what the trigger point should be, rather than just saying that it's when it's going to provide relevant information. Although I think if we do that, we might also need to try and be more precise on when to put it into OCI in the first place, because relevance is the trigger for putting it into OCI, so it probably needs to be the same trigger going in and coming out. Did I miss anything from the discussion we had in here?
Well, then I think we then maybe have sent Rachel.
Yes.
The same issue, and after that maybe we will open for additional comments and questions before we go to measurement.
Thank you. We had quite a similar discussion, I think, to what Peter was describing it in our session. When we started off talking about do you support the proposed description of the statement of profit or loss, I think there was broad support for that idea, and I think an acceptance that it would be quite difficult to go about defining profit or loss, and so no suggestion that we should go down that route. When we went on to talk about the proposals on the use of OCI, again, I think there was, again, quite broad support for the proposals in there and the suggestion that we'd done a reasonable job there. There were some comments, though, around the idea that we need to make sure that OCI isn't just used as a smoothing mechanism for things that that people view to be too volatile to put in profit or loss. There's a suggestion that a lot of investors actually want to see that information in profit or loss, and they don't want to see it somehow hidden away in OCI. And there's a feeling that there is a lack of prominence to OCI, certainly coming out from some of the comments from the investors. There was also an idea that a lot of what we do in terms of OCI pins on this idea of relevance, that we need to enhance the relevance of the information in profit or loss, and that really if we wanted to make our guidance better, we need to explain much more clearly what we mean by relevance. We also need to explain more clearly about what we mean by relevance in the period. So again, you know, what is relevant information in the period? Is a gain or loss on sale of an asset actually a relevant information in that period? And hence, is the recycling of that gain, if it's been reported previously in OCI, a relevant piece of information? There are also some concerns that pinning the use of OCI on relevance might be a little bit too much in the eye of the beholder. So what one person thinks, one board member, for example, thinks of as being relevant, another board member might disagree. Having said that, I think there was, again, broad support for the sort of notions of, that we were trying to put forward, the idea that there's a presumption things go into P&L and there's a presumption of recycling. I think overall that was supported. There were some suggestions that one way of actually providing better information about relevance would be in some way to link reporting amounts in profit or loss to the business activities of the entity or to the business model. And perhaps as a result of that, some idea of needing to define the business model. There was also an acknowledgement that this guidance that we're proposing is high-level guidance. It doesn't provide you with absolute answers to, I have this situation, therefore it's going to be reported in OCI, and therefore there's going to be recycling. It really is high-level guidance for the board, but taken in that context, broadly, people were supportive. Is that a fair summary from the people in my group?
It's a very fair summary. I just wanted to comment a little bit more. In a couple of GPF meetings, and what I say usually is not all that noteworthy anyway, so you may not remember, but I was pretty critical of what I thought the path you were heading, and the way I interpreted it was maybe just, it wasn't much of a definition, it was a difference between what one in the total statement of comprehensive income, I'll call that, and one in the P&L. Malcolm had specifically said this, so I speak for Malcolm, I'm going to specifically say it. And I think the group said, this is a really tremendous job you guys did here. I'm really impressed, surprisingly impressed. Just to get a little more detail on the relevance, I think there needs to be more meat. The suggestion I made is, within the paper, maybe you can base that more in what you have a description of the purpose of the profits and loss. So does something, including in the profit and loss, help you with better information to return any as made on its economic resources during the period? That'd be A. B, is it helpful in assessing prospects for future cash flows? That would be B. And then C would be assessing manager's stewardship of the entity's resources. And I think that provides a little more teeth, not a lot. But the real good example, I think, was Kevin, when we're talking about if you do mark-to-market of your own debt, that would really seem to be a good item for OCI if you want that way. And it would meet these three criteria instead of just saying relevant and whatever that means. Last comment I made, is I'm really interested in what the measurement group talked about, and they talked about this, is that I still think when you take the two parts of the exposure draft together, you're missing something, in that in the measurement period, you talk about historical costs, and then you talk about current value, and then current value has fair value, and then I think it's, I have to go look at my notes, but replacement value, which consists of maybe fulfillment and value in use, I think. If you look at the OCI paper, these things in the middle, like pension and foreign currency translation, that don't fit in to those measurement definitions, and I think you're missing something. There's something in between, and I think there needs to be better articulation within the measurement paper and then in the OCI paper of what is that pension measurement, what is that OCI measurement. It's merely counting conventions, so the pension is, but I think it's missing. I could be wrong. Good job, though. Really, really impressed.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Any other comments? So maybe from the measurement, Steve.
I think, Rachel, you said that the investors in your group said, don't put stuff into OCI just because of volatility. So I'd be interested to know what those investors think about pensions and whether they means they think that should be in P&L, or are they happy with that in OCI?
And I think Marietta had a good comment on pensions, because especially in relevance, because she said putting really pension stuff in OCI and should not be lead so that maybe companies go bankrupt because of the increasing pension liability, and therefore saying it was never appeared in P&L and therefore maybe not relevant. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that.
I just made the general comment that I think anything that can broadly be considered economic cost of running a business should be running through the P&L. So I think most of your pension assumptions, you know, they might change over time, whatever, but nobody, none of us have a crystal ball to know exactly what it looks like in the future and what's going to be recycling how and so forth. So I think you just have to take the view that if you look at your actuarial assumptions, they're being made on today's basis, and you can say interest environments will go back to normal, but then they might not. And it's just very important to actually say, well, you know, this is a cost of doing business, a cost of basically a part of remunerating our employees, and so it should be going through the P&L unless we have a very specific reason to think that there is some sort of a timing mismatch or whatever.
I'm very happy with having the revaluations the way you have put them into the OCI. And the reason is, of course, that if we, the last 2 years, got it into the P&L, we could not really evaluate the net earnings or earnings per share the way we do it, compared to analyst estimates and so on, over a quarter, not even over a year, because the volatility in earnings would be so tremendous in so many companies that we would immediately start talking about earnings excluding pension revaluations. So I think definitely this is a concept, a very good concept from me as an equity sell side analyst working with a short term perspective.
But does reducing volatility in itself enhance the relevance of earnings?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go into that English speaking discussion because I'm a Swede, so I like to
take over.
Go ahead.
Stephen, can't you settle for it's a good concept? If we didn't have it, we would, as equity analysts, try to get around the volatility in some other way, and that would be a worse way than having it in OCI. And then another thing, what is better with this concept than the previous one is that we each quarter get the market value or kind of market value of the pension liability. And if we like, we can include that in debt and get the true value of the debt instead of having it each April or something when the annual report is issued. So I think definitely, if you want to put it that way, yes, reducing volatility in this respect is good.
Some other investor used to Stephen's question before.
I'm another investor, but I would say that actually knowing the volatility of a company helps you understand what its cost of equity should be. What should you be discounting the stream of volatile earnings at? And the more volatile it is, the higher the discount rate. And if you can't see that because the earnings are being smooth, you're actually losing a really important piece of information. So I really do agree with Marietta on this.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
It isn't that the OCI disappears.
Yeah.
You can see it. It is that it's not included in the ordinary profit and loss statement that we look at short term.
Fair point.
So if you want to have volatility included, you can have the volatility included. But then again, you can also discuss this from what Bob said, the translation adjustment, how to look upon that. Pension, we can understand. Translation adjustments, I haven't come across any analyst that ever, or CFO for that matter either, has commented upon the translation adjustment, which easily can be today as big as the quarterly earning. But that is probably some part of the risk assessment also, but we never talk about it. But we have the figures, we can use them if we like.
And on the order, Hiroshi.
Thank you. I think the regarding this section, presentation and disclosure discussion is very improved compared with the discussion paper. However, I have a concern as discussed in the group discussion. Too much focus is on related to relevance. Whether you go to profit or loss or OCI is decided by relevance. Whether you recycle or not is decided by relevance. So it's very difficult to judge whether it's relevant or not. So in my view, I still think that you should define a profit or loss And regarding recycling, I support all recycling mechanism, which is used under US GAAP and Japanese GAAP. So I have one more comment regarding paragraph 727 on page 8, page 6. This is a little confusing. Confusing discussion, and you decide whether to go to OCI or not is decided by relevance. And after that, in this paragraph, you say that if the timing of recycling is not clear, we should move to profit or loss. It's a little confusing process. Thank you.
Rachel, what do you answer that?
I think all we're trying to say here is that unless if you go with our basic assumption here, which is the idea that profit or loss is primary, that means to us that really all income expenses should eventually hit profit or loss. So if you cannot find a reasonable basis to get those income and expenses into profit or loss, that calls into question that first idea that you had that perhaps you can increase relevance by reporting it outside profit or loss.
But I think it's not a subsequent decision. I think it's still at the stage when you're deciding whether to use OCI in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But what happens if you decide to move to OCI, considering relevance, mm-hmm. and then the timing is not clear, we need to go back to profit or loss?
No, I don't think that's what we're saying. I think what we're saying is that when you're first deciding whether to use OCI, one of the factors to look at is how it would be recycled. And if you can't find a sensible way of recycling it, then you need to think again about whether you're going to use OCI. And you might still decide to do it, but it's a kind of warning.
Instead, it's an indication. It's not an
Yeah, but that's I would say that's a secondary indication, not a...
Yeah, right. Marietta?
Could I just ask Kiros a question?
Because you have a definition for profit loss.
Thank you.
We're going to get another interest.
I wanted to add that a lot of companies, and my sector is particularly extreme now, actually report non-IFRS earnings specifically to give sell-side analysts a better feel for, you know, what would the earnings have been if you had adjusted for some of this lumpy discretionary spend like restructuring. So I don't think we need to smooth the IFRS earnings just to help analysts relate it back to their own numbers. And I just think as an analyst, for me, it's quite easy to interpret the P&L. If I look at the overall OCI figure, it can be quite difficult for me to see exactly what is really just due to pure timing differences, such as cash flow hedges, and how much of it is actually sort of economic costs where, you know, the preparer is just not willing to accept the economic reality of today, such as, like, I don't know, taking a view of how desperate central banks will be, you know, come next year. So I still prefer the approach of getting as much as possible of the economic cost into the P&L, accepting that the world can change from today to tomorrow and there is no easy way to make the assumptions around it.
Isn't the problem with that what really economic cost is and how you view it? Maybe. But okay, and I think, Lee, what I want to say is, I think maybe one of what you mentioned, we can maybe address also in the performance reporting project which we have on the research agenda to get a better insight what you think maybe is really economic cost and what is maybe not economic. Break it more down and then see, okay, better insight into performance. Next was Carlos.
Just go back to Stephen's question. I'm fine with the concept of having it on OCI. I think the problem is never clear when it should be recycled. The pension is in particular, you know, we never know when it should be recycled. And we discussed a bit, and there's no, it wasn't clear if it should be and when it should be recycled. And I guess, you know, the other group called attention to, you know, when should you recycle things that go into OCI in pension, you never know. And I guess in some cases you may have a point in time where you negotiate the trustees, for example, where at, you know, in some way we are marking to market. that patient. So that may be a point where you should turn to the PNL.
Well, pension seems to be a difficult issue. Chuck?
I would make similar statements as Peter. For me, having pensions in OCI is not a source of frustration. When I look at a company, I spend most of the time in the income statement, because what I want to guess is what I guess is a sustainable earning. And this is key, because sustainable earnings means value. So I have to make a guess. And putting the actuarial loss or gain, this is exactly what I don't want. It doesn't mean that I won't use the pension deficit, but that's a second stage once I will have, let's say, put a valuation on the business without the pension effect, which is something important, but I would then add in a second stage the pension deficit. So I would really think to have this separate, and I think the current presentation is fairly helpful to me.
Okay, Bob, and then we move to measurement.
I just wanted to mention this. I think it was a mistake not to include examples in the exposure draft, and to be concerned about you're not, just because it's a concept statement, potentially, you're not going back and redoing standards, but I know there was, I think, included in the board papers of how to think about it, especially with pensions and translation adjustments, and even us around the table who read the words and followed the stuff very closely had some questions and needed to work through them. And I think you'll get better responses and maybe more responses if people can operationalize a little bit. My suggestion would be, I think it's an important piece. Maybe you can put it on the exposure drafts out. Maybe you can put it on the website and a description of the project close to the link to the exposure draft and link this page so people can actually operationalize it. You may get some emotional reactions too of people who like OCI and see if they can come up with an explanation of why you guys may be wrong. But I think you should include it in the exposure draft.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Then we start on measurement, and let's start with the Victoria room. I don't know where. Absolutely, yeah. But you are now a staff member, because they should be report back.
Double check this.
Many talents.
Now I was told I had to report.
Really?
I was given instructions by Rachel. I mean, can I not obey that?
You're going to destroy the myth that men can't multitask.
We haven't started talking yet.
Okay, measurement. So we had two questions to answer. And the first one, have we correctly identified the measurement bases that should be described? And the basic answer, I think, from all our group was yes. But there was an interesting kind of addition to that yes, and I think it was broadly felt by the group, that while you're doing that, you should make a kind of an assumption that things will be historical cost unless there's a reason for current cost. So it's not kind of an equal balance. That's what people felt. And I think that was, if anybody disagrees with that in my group, please speak up. But I think it was reasonably broadly felt by the group. So and then we started talking about, well, what should be at current value, if we want to make that basic assumption. And the factors that were considered when selecting a measurement basis, I mean, they're pretty hard to argue against, because it's just saying you should use the concepts to work out when you should use fair value. So nobody disagreed with that too much. But when we got to particular items, we had some good discussions. Derivatives. So the first statement on derivatives, yes, they should be at current value, because otherwise maybe they don't appear at all until the end. But then the point was made, well, that's a balance sheet point of view. But what about the performance statement? Where do you put the movements in derivatives? And a reasonably strong feeling that maybe it was OCI and not profit and loss. And this was another sort of trend that came through the discussion as we went through other items. I queried them that if they assume historical cost, are they still happy with impairments? And the answer to that was yes. So we've got a bit of prudence came into the discussion as well, and I think that was broadly accepted. Somebody said, well, a trading portfolio is obviously current value. And profit and loss if the trading's quick. And then if it's not quick, then you slide into the available for sale type, and then it might be OCI or it might be profit and loss, depending. And there's some that felt if it wasn't a really rapidly trading portfolio, then maybe it didn't always necessarily have to be current value. Biological assets are always good for a debate. And we talked about trees and some pushback on revaluation of trees. I couldn't contain them.
We had the same discussion.
Well, you know, I tried to point out that trees are, well, biological assets are slightly different because they grow. But that wasn't well accepted. I guess in the end, the final statement made was really, and it was a little bit reflected in this previous discussion we've just had, that the performance part of the financial reports in this regard is more important than the balance sheet. So the bigger decisions are, if you're going to have current values for the sake of the balance sheet, what do you do in the performance statements? Maybe we should be looking first at what should we do about current value in the performance statements and then worry about the balance sheet. So there was a heavy influence on looking at the performance statements. I think that was overall it. Unless anybody wants to add.
We had fun.
Yeah.
Was it shared between procurers and users?
We didn't have too much disagreement in the group. Well, we spoke about inventories as well when they talked about the trading portfolio. I said, what about inventories? But everybody said that was just being silly.
That's your words.
Are you the other?
Yeah, Elena took notes on my.
Well, I can say that our group was very supportive of our proposal, which we were very, very happy to hear. They agreed to our suggested measurement basis, and they broadly agreed that the selection of measurement process is well described and the ISB will be able to use it. And it is something they can actually use, which we don't have now. With regards to what we discussed, most of all, it was mainly how measurement uncertainty affects the selection of measurement bases, and here we had all sorts of ideas, and if the other group discussed trees, we discussed discovery of oil and how can you measure that, and how outcome uncertainty and measurement uncertainty would affect whether you recognize the asset, and if so, would you measure it? So that was basically what we were talking about, and if anybody wants to add something.
Okay. Any comments from the members of the group too? Okay. Marietta?
Just again, a very high-level comment. I mean, I think, you know, in this room we're pretty sophisticated, so we can probably live with things flowing in terms of measurement, flowing through the P&L or flowing through the OCI. But I would just caution again that there is a very political angle to this. And if a company, for example, reports stellar earnings and then a few days later is bust because some cash-settled derivative moved against it, I don't think you can explain to the little guy that all of this was visible in the P&L, in the accounts through the OCI, and you could quite quickly end up in a situation where politicians say, okay, we just need better accounting, let's get rid of IFRS and there goes our global standards, and suddenly we're back to having European standards and whatever. And I think there are probably enough people in Brussels who would quite like to seize that, you know, additional control over accounting anyway. So I just think that, you know, coming back to Glenn's point, I think volatility, anything that kind of shows the risk that a company is exposed to, even if it's just a temporary risk and goes away tomorrow, I think just from a political perspective, it's much safer to show it in the P&L than in OCI.
But shouldn't we shouldn't we make accounting standards for politicians? I don't think so, but I think it is.
Well, they have
the politicians, from my perspective, not every risk has to be shown directly in the P&L, because therefore we have, I think we have the notes, we have the financial position, and we have the P&L, and therefore I think it's a little bit easy to say it was not shown in the P&L, and therefore the risk was not really transparent to everybody. I think that is the reason why we have financial statements, I think, even further than the P&L. But also on the discussion, I think from Ian, what I heard, I think it is interesting that people really relate measurement primary to the performance and then secondary to balance sheet and maybe risk, right? That is what I'm hearing from the discussion. Who was next? Malcolm.
When I was looking through this, I was thinking about perhaps some of the more problematic areas. And I guess I can get there that the pension liability falls into a sort of a current value basis.
Which measurement? That's kind of, that was going to be my point I'm going to make. But
yeah.
So you can think of two measurements of pensions. What is recognized on the balance sheet?
Well, it's a net figure, so it's a bit of a strange one. It's a net thing, but it's made up of two measurements. So, your point?
My point, you can keep going, is I think there's a hole because there's something missing. It has to do with pensions.
And the other point, perhaps I'm a bit stupid, but deferred tax, what is that? Is that historic basis, or is that? Where does that fit in?
We haven't discussed that with the board, but I think it is a current measurement because it's how much tax would you pay if you realised the carrying amount of the asset. It's not present value, of course, and so on, but I think it's based on current inputs.
Okay. I'm shooting from the hip. I'm not quite there, but I'm have to think about it.
Bob?
Similar kind of comment. I didn't think about deferred taxes, but I don't know on the measurement paper if there's a hole or not. To the question, I may answer no. But you talk about historical cost and then fair value, and fair value is made up of value in use and fulfillment value. And it talks about cash flow techniques. I guess it maybe not say discounted, so it could be undiscounted. But I think you have a measurement hole missing, unless you don't want it in the future standards, and that is accounting conventions that are not current value, are not historical cost, and then within current value, they're not. I don't think they fit the definition of value, use, and fulfillment value. It's fine if you want to get rid of them, but the future board members should have to follow the concept statement and not be able to allow them. And there's a hole in connection.
What do you mean by accounting conventions?
Well, I think deferred tax. Deferred tax.
I'm not sure if it's a great example, but deferred taxes, is that a cash flow? What is it? What is deferred taxes in this? What category does it fit into? Where does it fit? Measurement of deferred taxes.
It's not cost.
Not cost.
Not cost.
You're not allowed to answer that. You're not allowed to answer that way. You have really two choices or three choices if I go 2A and B. So it's not cost. Now you only have two choices. Is it value and use and fulfillment value? Which one is it?
It's not cost. It's not fair value. And it is a current value, to Peter's point.
Which one? Value and use and fulfillment value?
That's asset and liability, so it could be both. The point
is, we don't have both anymore.
Well, we're describing an entity-specific current value in a rather vague way, because we don't precisely define fulfillment value and value in use. We leave open what's included and what isn't included, such as non-performance risk and discount rate and the like. So they're sufficiently wide to be a current value measure that will encompass many of the things that, which I think we're talking about. One of the issues is whether we have define them so loosely that it doesn't really help the board in actually making a decision about a measurement technique.
Yeah, just one comment is I probably didn't read it close enough and don't do this on a day-to-day basis, but you guys see it as, my first impression with someone is you defined it too narrowly. And so it's kind of the exact opposite reaction than you have, and that maybe you just didn't read it close enough or read it long enough, but when it has these categorizations and saying that current value is value in use or fulfillment value, and then I see a description of both of them, they seem pretty somewhat specific to me, and then maybe they open up in the end, but just something to think about.
But there is also a discussion in there of whether the board would modify them in some way. So for example, there's a discussion of what to do in own credit, and for fulfillment value we said that it's conceptually included in fulfillment value, but the board might well decide for all the well-known reasons not to include it in a particular case. And I think what that does is it does actually narrow things down, because it doesn't say we just have to select solely from that menu of the three options. Okay. But we can sort of tweak them a bit if needed. But I think what it does is establish more clearly that those would be the starting point for anything. Whereas some of the things we've built up in the past have been a bit more ad hoc, and the starting point is well defined.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Peter? It seems like Marietta and I are in the opposite corner of the OCI discussion, so I need to comment a little bit about on her political angle. And if I take, I can take like five large engineering companies in Sweden today that has fairly poor performance, or second people by the thousands. If I add, because they are truly multinational, if I add the translation adjustment and put that into the income statement, they will become very profitable. So if you just present that earnings figure, saying the profit went up by 3 times or so because of the dollar has increased, the pound has increased, the euro to some extent has increased, and then at the same time say, and we need to rationalize and sack like 5,000 persons. That is a political angle that is much more difficult to handle than to have it the way we have now.
Kevin?
As I was reading the measurement papers, and this probably sounds heretical as an accountant sitting around the table, but the concept that things had to balance, I struggled to get onto. If I was a debt investor, I would value debt at fair value. But if I was an equity investor, I'd probably value the debt at historical cost. And so the concept that the asset value is always the liability value coming through, I think, ends up giving irrational arguments at certain times. And there needs to be a way in which the value of an asset is not necessarily equivalent to the value of the liability in the same entity, yes, but not in two different perspectives. So that an industrial company that's going to settle its debt at historical cost should be able to record debt at historical cost, whereas an entity that trades debt would always show its debt or at fair value. And therefore, it does very much come up with arguments of assets and then make an assumption that the liability is the opposite number, which is not necessarily always the true case.
And Peter wants to answer.
Can I comment on that? Because normally we try to value the operations using a kind of a cash flow oriented approach and then deduct the debt. And when we deduct the debt, we need the market value.
No.
No.
I'm in equity.
Shall I comment? I mean,
maybe sure.
If it's relevant to his conversation, why don't you go ahead and then I'll follow.
We're going to be the judge of relevance.
let me be. No, it's if you do a firm value approach evaluation, you want to value the equity, the firm is more or less in high yield territory with the debt trading at 60 cents on the dollar or euro. You if you deduct from the firm value the market value of the debt, you paint a pretty rosy picture for the equity. I'm seen Dan smiling already. It's
the claim of the debt holders is not reduced because the market value is lower. The claim of the debt holders remains as it is, the nominal. And actually, I think adjustments for own credit in the financial statement are quite confusing and causing a lot of work for analysts to repaint.
So we learned that also the valuation techniques are different, but continue.
Martin, can I just clarify one point to make sure it's not a misunderstanding? I think what Kevin's referring to is the statements in the ED that if one party has a liability, it follows that somebody else has an asset. But that's not saying they have to be the same measurement basis. And what we're saying in the ED is the board would decide for each asset and each liability what's going to be the most useful measurement.
Say that at the moment when you look at the standards, the most usual measurement is measure my liability by reference to the current fair value of the asset, and that is not necessarily the correct measurement.
I think you're referring to IFRS 13, so the fair value of a liability would equal the fair value of the corresponding asset.
Investor, which is
but that doesn't mean to say that we would measure and report that liability at the same measure as you would report the asset. You could have the asset at fair value and the liability at cost,
but
if that provided the most relevant information. But the fair value of the liability would be the same as the fair value of the corresponding asset.
But in some cases, we're compelled to report that.
Maybe you can clarify that over dinner, but let's move.
Let's not.
I wanted to go back to Bob's discussion about deferred taxes. And when you look at the value in use and fulfillment value, they talk about that they're discounted amounts. And so I do think you have a gap in the write-up that perhaps there are certain times that an undiscounted number would be more relevant because there's so much variations in when you'll be able to realize the deferred taxes. You probably don't really know, and the cost of implementing that would be onerous.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandra. Guru?
Okay. Thank you. Regarding the measurement, the 6.54A says how the asset or liability contributes to future cash flows. This will depend in part on the nature of the business activities conducted by the entity. I think that this is very important, and although this says in part, but I would say that mostly or usually that the nature of the business activities would the key determinant of the measurement. The clearer explanation or the clearer picture of the business activities will also serve how we should we determine the PL or OCI. So that will enhance the concept of relevance. You know, as we discussed, that the relevance is a too broad word, and it's a key concept of the accounting standards, but it's too, you know, broad or too obscure. But by defining the business activities or business model, I think that the relevance could become a more robust concept.
That is what we have in IFRS 9 between cost and fair value OCI based also on business model. Next is Malcolm.
So my comment's a bit of a detailed one, but I've spent during my career a lot of time thinking about impairment tests and what value in use is and what fair value is when one's doing it. So you've got actually a lot of description here about what you think value in use is. Is that just as a starting point? Is that the first time you specify what value in use is, or is that completely new thinking here?
There's quite a lot of discussion in IS 36 of value in use.
But there is. I've studied that, but so my follow-on point is I mean I've battled to understand some of the points in IS 36 as regards value in use. For example, why for a value in use calculation you have to use a pre-tax rate and not a post-tax rate for fair value, why with a value in use calculation, you're doing a cash flow calculation, but you're not allowed to take into account renovation of the equipment. So it's a bit of a detailed point, but what's the conception? I mean, I've never understood conceptually why why you ended up excluding and requiring in IES 36 some of these very specific points. So, as I said, it's not perhaps really addressing your two questions, but I mean, I'd like to understand what you regard as being, why, for example, pre-tax against post-tax? Yeah. Why can't you take into account in your cash flows the fact you're going to renovate or somehow refurbish the equipment? So,
What we're trying to, obviously, IS 36 was written getting on 20 years ago now, probably. What we were trying to do in the framework was kind of extract what we saw as the conceptual core of what was in there without getting into that massive detail that's on some of the points.
So I think what I'm saying is I don't really understand the conceptual framework of some of your guidance on value in use in IS 36.
I remember some of the discussions at the time, and I think some of it was more a kind of rule book mentality.
Yes, which is not conceptual. So it's not direct. I don't know where you would want to articulate what are the concepts behind value in use. I mean, should it be in the conceptual framework?
Yeah, the framework is the place to explain.
In which case, you need to expand and explain. If you believe value in use has to use pre-tax tax rates, then explain why you believe that has to be the case.
Do we have to be so specific in the framework?
Standard
level.
You're saying you make the distinction between one is more entity specific against market participant specific, but I don't see use of a pre or post tax rate as having anything to do with a market participant or an entity specific view.
Malcolm, do you think it's possible to have a conceptual basis for value in use? I mean, fair value is very clear. You can describe it in one sentence. I'm not sure you can describe value in use in one sentence. And therefore, does it just become a series of rules, and is it really a measurement basis? I mean, I'm sure some people are going to respond to this conceptual framework saying you shouldn't have value in use in there.
Well, perhaps talk about over drinks tonight or something, but I mean, for me, value in use is the concept that you are using your plant there. We all are going to invest in fixed assets, and if you sold it tomorrow, of course, you're not going to get what you paid for it. But if you use it for the next 20 years, it's going to generate a return.
So right. It's the value from using it. So therefore, do we have to specify whether it's pre-tax or post-tax?
And I don't. Well, I never understood why there was this distinction between.
No, I haven't either. Why?
Okay. I think before we finish this today's session, I want to give maybe Robert the opportunity. Do you have any comments on the topic we discussed, or Murillo from his phone? Robert. No. Okay.
He's silent.
Oh, I can talk. If you guys really want me to talk, I can.
Oh, my God.
But I will hold back.
But he don't shout.
Okay. And Murillo, do we have any? We're still on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here. I have no comment.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay.